Life Matters here on RN. Now, this is a real cracker of a story, if I do say so. A serendipitous discovery in the back of a shop in a small Japanese town called Takayama is rewriting the understanding of Australia's pre-war race relations and the history of Australian photography. Now, the discovery was a photo album with images taken by a little-known Japanese photographer called Ichiro Kageyama. Now, he was working in Sydney during the early to mid-20th century. He worked not only with Australian photographers, but also with magazine publishers and the like, when the so-called White Australia policy defined Australia as a racially exclusive country. His photographs and his life challenge expectations about the historical relationship between Australia and Japan. Now, that discovery that I talked about was made by Professor Melissa Miles, who's an art historian and an Australian Research Council Future Fellow with Monash University's Art History and Theory program. She joins me now here on Life Matters. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you, Daniel.
What took you to Takayama, that little Japanese town?
Well, I'm working on a project about Australian and Japanese relations through photography with Professor Robin Gerster. And so we are very interested in the relationships between Australia and Japan that might tell a different story, and how photographers from Australia and Japan have met and forged different kinds of relationships with one another to what's been documented in mainstream histories. And I'd heard about Kageyama and did a little bit of digging and found out that he'd come from Takayama, and just went there hoping I might find something interesting.
And what? Tell us what you found in Takayama. Because it's quite off the beaten track, isn't it? It's not as if it's a major tourist destination, although I think that it does have tourist elements to it, that little town.
Yes, some tourists do go, and it's a beautiful place. It's in the mountains. It's quite a small town, and it's quite lovely. Over quite a period of negotiating with the Takayama Town Hall and talking to people there, I was put in touch with a lady whose father-in-law was friends with Kageyama. And so a meeting was arranged at the back of her fabulous little jewellery shop, and she produced this album of Kageyama's time in Sydney, which was very exciting to me because there are really only a handful of Kageyama's prints around. No one really knows where they've all gone. And this album had 154 photographs, all taken around 1914 and 1915.
So you really struck gold, didn't you?
Oh, it was absolute gold. And even better, the very kind lady felt that because I was so interested in the project and in this work and Kageyama and at the Photographs Royal of Sydney, she kindly gave me the album to bring back to Australia.
And just describe some of those images. They're beautiful sepia-toned images. They're interesting. There's photographs of dappled sunlight on two men sitting on a bench. One I saw of the front of a car shot from the passenger for the driver's seat of a car, looking out on some cows crossing a road out near Maitland. But describe some of those images. What did he capture in his photographs?
Oh, there's all sorts of things in the album, which is what makes it so exciting. This was a time where he was developing his creative skills as a photographer. He joined the Photographic Society of New South Wales and was working with some very well-known Australian photographers, including Harold Cazineau. And so it's all of his experiments with landscape, with different techniques, but he's also assembled photographs that have been sent from home, of his family in Japan. So they're a means of maintaining connections with home. There's photographs of the Australian-Japanese community enjoying picnics together.
This is the Australian-Japanese community here in Sydney?
In Sydney, yes. Anglo-Australians and Japanese-Australians, blended families, people enjoying picnics together, social events together. There's wonderful pictures of an amusement park in Sydney called White City, which was in Rushcutters Bay between 1913 and 1917, and it had a Japanese village as one of the attractions. And so our Japanese photographer went along and took pictures of this village, which probably looked quite odd to him. It was an Australian interpretation of a Japanese village.
How did Ichiro Kageyama come to be in Australia? I mean, if you can just quickly summarise how he got to be here at the time he was here.
Well, that's a mystery. One story is that he was an illegal stowaway. And he came around 1907-ish on a ship when he was a teenager. But the official story that he gave to our immigration officials was that he came as an infant to Thursday Island with his father. His father died, and then he essentially was raised by family friends and then made his way to Sydney, where he developed his career. Unfortunately, there are no documents to prove either story, so it's a bit of a mystery.
There are quite extraordinary. There's quite a paper trail of people who had to bypass or who sought exemption from the what we call the White Australia policy, which controlled people of non-English speaking background and their travels through the country. So, and I've seen a lot of these images. They're often photographs and full kind of histories and handprints. These are all people who are trying to get exempted from the White Australia policy, but no records in the National Archives for Ichiro Kageyama.
There are, but they come later. They come in the 1930s.
And this is
so there are no arrival documents.
Right. But this is interesting. I mean, there is some speculation, given the time frame we're talking about here, there is some speculation he may have been a spy photographing Sydney.
Well, yes, that's speculation.
Is it just rampant
speculation,
or is there some substance?
There's no evidence of it. A family friend of his in Takayama apparently said that Kageyama had told them that he was a spy, but this is, coming to me third hand as really local gossip. Australian security police looked into Kageyama in the lead up to the Second World War because they were generally quite paranoid about Japanese photographers, and he was placed under surveillance, and they found that he was making some sound recordings and delivering sound recordings, which could be suspicious, but they felt there was nothing particularly to worry about.
Making sound recordings. I'd love to hear those. What happened to them? Did you find them?
No, they think that they were wax cylinders, and they think it's possibly radio broadcasts from Japan.
Wow. Now, what drew him to photography? I mean, you've obviously been drawn into his life, the life of Ichiro Kageyama, but what drew him to photography?
That's another mystery, but he didn't leave behind any documents about his interest in photography. He only left us with his photographs. But I can tell you from his photographs, he used photography as a medium for connecting to other people, for understanding his place in Australia, for earning a living. He had a commercial studio and worked for the fabulous Home magazine alongside Max Dupain and Harold Casneau. And so it was something that obviously gave him a lot of pleasure. It was a social thing for him, but also a means of developing a career in Australia, a very successful career.
You're an art historian, but can you be objective and obviously a fan of his story? Can you be objective and perhaps give us a sense of how good a photographer he was? I mean, it's enough that he actually made all these images and documented Sydney at this time and other parts of Australia. But what kind of a photographer was he?
He was a very good photographer. I must admit my interest in him is more from the social and cultural point of view, but he was a very good photographer. He exhibited in Japan and Australia while he lived in Sydney. He had his work published. Sydney Ure Smith, who published the Home magazine, was very fussy. He only included the very best artists and photographers in the Home magazine, and he selected Kageyama as one of his photographers. So there's a lot of evidence that at the time he was appreciated, as well as my own appreciation of his work.
It's amazing how photographs have this claim to truth. You know, we can see this in the history of photography, documentary photography. Without these, well, sometimes the image is so good that it actually replaces any actual memory. A really good example is a photograph that Mervyn Bishop took when he returned the dirt to the Gurindji strike leader Vincent Lingiari at Wave Hill. And people say that is the memory, that's a created, it has this kind of claim to truth that so many other things don't have. I mean, is that how you feel about photography? It has a special status.
It does have a special status, but it is also a means of constructing those memories. Like that photograph of by Mervyn Bishop that you mentioned was a reenactment of a particular very important moment.
I left that out.
So it's also about using photography to construct those moments, to tell us what's important for us to project at a particular time, what stories we want to tell. And also some photographs just disappear from historical memory. What lasts? What doesn't last? All of these things are really important socially, culturally and politically.
What happened to Kageyama?
Well, he took the last ship back to Japan in 1941. If he'd stayed in Australia any longer, he would have been interned, and went back to Japan and became a translator after the war in Takayama, negotiating between the American occupying forces in Takayama and the local Japanese people. And eventually, when things settled down, he opened his photography studio again in Takayama, beautiful spot along the river, and had a very nice life.
Did he ever come back to Australia after 1941?
No, he didn't, sadly.
And his English must have been quite extraordinary. I understand he had some role with the occupying forces in Japan after the war?
Yes, absolutely. His English was very good. Our immigration officials who interviewed him in the 30s commented on his superior English skills, and he used those skills back in Japan. There's also letters from American tourists who met with him while he was in Takayama and enjoyed some outings, some photography outings in the area with him. So he certainly maintained his English skills and used them to keep connections with other parts of the world and visitors to Takayama.
Yeah, extraordinary story. Thank you so much for sharing it. I understand you're going to be giving a lecture about this this extraordinary man.
Yes, I am in Brisbane next Wednesday, the 19th, at the Main Centre at UQ. It's at 6 o'clock.
Melissa, thank you so much for joining me here on Life Matters.
Thanks, Daniel.
That's Professor Melissa Miles. She's an art historian and an Australian Research Council fellow, future fellow rather, with Monash University's Art History and Theory program. You're on Life Matters.